Welcome to The Afterglow. The Afterglow podcast gives women, we're talking to you, the permission and tools to live life according to your own rules.
Yes, this is a platform to educate and empower women identifying humans through intriguing conversations with courageous Canadian women who are breaking down limiting beliefs and outdated rules. These women have done it, are doing it, or can provide tools for you to do the same.
We are Julie Watson
and Liz Doyle-Hermer.
And we started Afterglow, our yoga studio, after years of staying home to raise kids. Now, as podcasters, we want to help others do the same. Step into your own power. It's time to shake things up and get real about who you are and what you want.
The Afterglow is your next act. It's what came after you did what you were told and instead decided to do what was in your heart. It's how you have reinvented yourself. It's your vision for the next 40 to 50 years. It's when you took your power back.
Welcome back to The Afterglow. We're so excited today on episode 2, season 3, to have our really good friend and also a bit of an idol of ours, Jane Breen, here with us. Jane is a former financial executive and social justice activist. She's living with a brain cancer and has raised close to $500,000 to support cancer research through her arts-focused campaign, Gratitude 10, which we'll talk about. She lives in the Beaches, where we live, with her husband and two daughters. And she also comes to Afterglow to do yoga here, which is how we met Jane originally 6 years ago. So let's get started, Jane. We're so excited to have you here today.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Jane, welcome. $500,000. When Julie was reading that, my mind just went, wow, that's a lot, Jane. Amazing. What's it like to hear that number?
It makes me feel really, really proud. I didn't have a background in fundraising before. And it started as a way to alleviate some of the frustrations that I had with my choices when I learned of my incurable cancer. And so it's really meaningful. And at times it can be really hard work emotionally and just, you know, physically, the logistics of doing fundraising. But it brings a lot of meaning and a lot of joy to my life.
Yeah, so let's go back and talk about, you know, obviously we want to hear about Gratitude 10 and what it is all about. But the reason, as you mentioned, that you created this is to sort of channel your energies into yes. more of a purpose after finding out about your diagnosis. So tell us about, you know, how old you were, what your life was like at the time, what was going on for you, and then receiving this diagnosis of brain cancer.
So I was... Good question. I think I was 38. My children were ages 4 and 6. And I was in the midst of a very successful time in my career with lots of opportunity and loving what I was doing. And it came as a complete shock. So, you know, from that day forward, and the reason why I call my charity initiative Gratitude 10 is because the date I found out was November 10th. And from that day forward, you know, life changed in an instant, mm-hmm. which happens for a lot of people, and I'm one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You chose the word gratitude. I'm looking at Julie. She's wearing a sweatshirt from one of your
yes.
events, Gratitude
yes.
10. And you've chosen that word gratitude. What is it that you want in choosing that word? What is it that you want people to know?
So what I said when coming up with that name is, you know, I often times hear people say if there's like a anniversary of something bad that's happened, that it's a day that they don't like and they think of negatively, and they get worried about and anticipate it's coming. And I wanted to sort of flip the narrative on that and say, I am going to look for joy and movement on November 10th, and a little bit of that on every day, and really just to try. It doesn't happen every day for me and for most people, but just going out there in the spirit of trying to look for those things and things to be grateful for on a daily basis.
So do you think that that attitude, or what you've brought into your body physically, mentally, emotionally, with that take on things, is a part of your healing, like has aided in your healing process?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. There's also words that I don't like to use around my cancer. I don't ever say I'm battling cancer. I don't like people to say that. I say I'm living with cancer. It doesn't define me, and it doesn't define my family. So I don't like that concept of a fight. Especially, I think I came to that for two reasons. One, because I still have a significant size tumor sitting in my brain. And, you know, there's something to having a tumor in your brain. And for whatever reason, it decided to be there. And so I wanted to have some respect for my tumor. That's part of it. I didn't want to have that negative connotation. And also because it also was born from hearing so many people. And of course, it's wonderful for them. And I love that science has progressed such that there are so many curable cancers. But hearing people say all of the time, oh, I fought it. I beat my cancer. You know, there are more and more people that are having cancers that we live with, that are chronic conditions. And so I don't think it's healthy to think of it as a fight. Mm. I don't want to be in a fight for the rest of my life. So that's sort of where the attitude comes from.
Yeah. You're coexisting, you know, I think of rather than battling something that's in your brain.
Yes.
Accepting, yeah. And coexisting. And, you know, we see you walk into our studio with everything you're talking about, right? Embodying being here and being present and being grateful for the gift of today rather than focusing on what you don't have. And is that something that comes easily for you? Like, was that taught to you? Because most people, many of us, you know, myself included, would maybe not react the same way. So where does that come from?
It doesn't come easily. I think you can both attest to me coming in on good days and bad days. And, you know, I'm very open emotionally. Which I do think is a product of my upbringing, my parents allowing me to have the space to experience my wide range of emotions, you know, for the appropriate amount of time. You know, they really found a good balance for that with me. You know, there has been a lot of huge struggle that I don't want to hide, and I don't hide from people. You know, since my cancer diagnosis, I have lived through two major depressive episodes. And I think a lot of people can relate to mental health struggles, especially over the last few years, and also amongst your audience. You know, while those are diagnosed, they're called secondary depressions because they're related to my cancer diagnosis. I didn't have mental health issues before. Not that that's, you know, an issue, but that has been an added complexity. Mm-hmm. And so, sure, my times through my surgery, my chemotherapy, my radiation were difficult on me physically. I think that the hardest thing of living with an incurable disease is the mental aspect of it. You know, I have to monitor my mental health on a daily basis. That's my, you know, that's a struggle. It's something I work on pretty much every moment of every day.
Can you tell us what you do for your mental health every day? Like, what are the little things that you are paying attention to or employing so that you can, you know, just feel better?
Yeah. Well, I go to Afterglow yoga almost every day. And that is a huge part of my routine.
Is that new for you, Jane? Did you do yoga before, or is that?
I did a little bit of yoga, but probably not with a different mindset. Mm. I saw it as exercise, and I did some hot yoga. I did like the quick 45-minute session at my gym, but during work. And the way that I approach yoga now and the way that you guys allow us to practice at the studio, I wasn't familiar with that before my cancer.
So more mindful
approach. Coming to the mat for breath, mm-hmm. Practicing by listening to my body, and being in a space where I feel very comfortable with the community. So that's one of my tools. I have I pretty regularly use massage and acupuncture. You know, and just with yoga, the massage and the acupuncture, they're with people that I've developed really, really close relationships with. And so they're a trusted part of my healthcare team. Mm. And I'm very lucky now to also have a pretty incredible psychiatrist. Mm. And also, as I talk about listening to myself and where I'm at, sometimes I change things up, the quantities, the mix, and that's okay. We always have to remind ourselves, if your body or your mind tells you to change something, that's okay. You know, if my mind and my body tells me to lie in bed and binge watch something on Netflix, then...
I mean, you've seen all the shows.
Yeah,
you've seen exactly. All the shows. So.
Yeah, yeah. Then I don't believe in guilty pleasures. I just believe in pleasure.
I love that. I love that. And I'm reminded of the note cards that you guys received at your recent workshop from Angela, which was self-care is your responsibility. But she said, I think today she said something like self-care is your right. And that sounds like you've really taken that on for yourself, right? Like you're owning that.
Yes. Yes. And it's for me, but it's also, yeah, it's disclaimer here, sometimes I can take it too far because I've always been someone who thinks I'm pretty great. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I have to put myself in check and be like, oh yeah, I need to take care of, you know, maybe some other things for members of my family or for friends. But yes, I've gotten even better about taking care of myself, more so listening to what my body really needs. Most of the time it's slowing down, and that's hard. As you mentioned in the beginning, I was a financial services executive. My life was very fast paced, and I had a lot of responsibility that I loved. You know, it's hard to slow down and to come to that realization.
What a contrast, right? I think of you as, you know, in finance, it's fast paced, it's go, it's using your intellect. And the first part of your life, really everything you had done, or a lot you had done, you know, choices to support that being where you were. You said you were loving it, you were thriving in it. And now being on this slower, more mindful path, yet still setting big goals, accomplishing huge things, as we said, $500,000. And one of the things we're curious about and is what your afterglow might be. And the definition we're using for afterglow is it's what you want to pursue.
Yeah.
When you listen to your heart and 100% believe in yourself. Your afterglow might have been financial services at some point, but what is it for you now?
Yeah, so it is having the space and the time to learn and to grow and to teach. And in the intro, you know, Julie talked about my kind of newfound activism. And actually, when my husband was helping me prepare my bio, he had written activist. And I was like, no. And he said, well, that's what you're doing right now. I guess I'm working on coming into owning that. Trying to, you know, it's a space where you have to have a lot of humility and be able to make mistakes. So even in owning that title, wearing that title, I worry and I don't want to, you know, I'm certainly proud of my accomplishments in that space, but I also worry about overstating them. I know that it's something that I think about. I think about new things now, kind of every day, and how I want to live my life with purpose and how I want to actively change places and spaces and structures and find the right way to engage with people and bridge ideologies. And I really find a lot of meaning in it.
I love that you said there's a lot of humility in it, because it is, you know, a lot of it is feeling your way through it to what feels right, but also what feels right to others. And that's part of what you are working towards, is that healing for yourself and others in other communities. And so can you tell us a couple of things or some details of what are the things that you have started doing as an activist?
So what I'm doing has, you start what started this all was the murder of George Floyd. I think mm-hmm. that was something that was big for all of us. And that was the catalyst for me to start paying attention and look at what was going on in my community And my country that we always say is so multicultural, it's Canada. And so I became curious and I did a lot of reading. You know, I love to read. So on various topics and very Canadian centered. And then there's so many things. You're like, oh, I want to help here. I want to help there. I want to help here. And so, you know, living with an incurable cancer, my children are a big priority. And so I knew that I wanted to spend my energy and time in spaces that they also inhabited. So most of my work has been done within their two schools. So at one of my daughter's schools, I co-founded what we call an equity circle. It's a subcommittee of our parent council. And we have done so many things together, from providing new resources in the classroom for Black History Month that center Black stories of joy and culture, providing a curriculum for Asian Heritage Month that tells the true stories of immigration. I used my own family's 5 generations in Canada and talked about the types of discrimination that my own family experienced. And that was a really wonderful journey for me, because I also realized that as we looked at racism or other forms of discrimination, that growing up in a primarily Polish and Ukrainian neighborhood in Toronto, right in the city, and being biracial, that I really wanted to be white. I thought I was white. I wanted to be white. And just in the last few years, have I been looking more into that side of my heritage and my culture, and teaching my children about it, and ensuring that we celebrate those cultural traditions, as opposed to just the ones that come from the white and Anglo-Saxon part of our identities.
You know, as you were talking about your afterglow, it was, it has, and I just want to point this out for other people who might have an idea of what their afterglow is. And it does have this sense of, you know, do I get to be this? Can I call myself this? And, you know, your husband's very readily, he's able to say, you're an activist. And then for ourselves, when we're tiptoeing around our afterglow, it is, do I get to be this? You know, so that's, I just wanted to point that out. That's common. That's a common experience.
Yeah.
Within. And one of the reasons we say it's what your afterglow is, what you want to pursue when you listen to your heart and have that moment, even if it just lasts for an instant, of 100% believing in yourself. But I'd love to learn more about, you touched on this briefly, what are you open to sharing around your own family's experience with racism? You touched on the 5 generations. What are you open to sharing around that?
So my great grandfather came to Canada having to pay a head tax to enter the country, and it's great. We still have those original documents, so those are important part of our heritage. Having to pay a lot of money just to come into the country. He, I don't know his full story, his Harry Gao, but he made his way to Thunder Bay eventually, and was able to be a part owner of a Greasy Spoon, a Chinese Canadian restaurant in Thunder Bay. So that's my great grandfather. My father was sent to Canada by his family when he was 10, it was seven, on his own. He was something that we often refer to now as a paper son, because there was also a clampdown on immigration when my dad came in the 50s. Chinese families would do to get around that is they would pad their family immigration status when they came over, and then would reach out to friends and relatives back in China to say, I can bring someone over. And so my dad has five sisters. So being the only son, he was sent. And the rest of his family stayed. By this point, they had made it to Hong Kong. But he's originally from Canton, a province in China. And he lived with relatives from the time he was seven until his family joined him at 17. So 10 years, you know, he was with great loving relatives, but he was without his family for 10 years. And then, you know, when it comes to my story, there was a lot of, you know, what we call now microaggressions, being objectified, people looking at me, and instead of asking curious questions about my ethnicity, they would say things like, what are you? What are you? Or they'd say, where are you from? And I'll say, Toronto, I'm from Toronto. And they would say, no, you know what I mean. Where are you really from?
It used to bug me so much whenever I get that.
Yes, yes. Or the like, you know, the backhanded compliment, like, oh, you're so exotic.
Mm-hmm. So exotic, you got that too, Liz. You got exotic too.
Exotic means foreign, right?
Yeah.
You're different. And so
I think it's so good just to pause for a moment here, just to recognize that this information you're sharing, like, by the way, those are microaggressions, right? I think that there's a lot of people out there who don't actually know that asking where you're from to find out what your, you know, ethnicity is, or, you know, where your family of origin was from, that question is a microaggression.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know what other people are comfortable with, but, you know, as I became older and I got those questions all the time, I was always, I always just flipped right back. Oh, you mean you want to know more about my family's ethnic origins? Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would tell them, and that's terminology that I'm comfortable with. I know now sometimes when I'm meeting people, whether it's working in this new space that I'm working in or otherwise, and I am curious, that's something I struggle with now too. I know that I'm comfortable with that question, I'm a little bit more careful, I guess, these days around the timing of when that's appropriate. Again, being kind to myself that it's okay to have that curiosity, holding back and finding the right opportunity if it's a new relationship that I'm building.
Mm-hmm. You're providing us with so many lessons here today, and, you know, we know you. And so I'm learning so much as well. And like you've said that your, struggle with your illness, you've got this incredible attitude, but you've also said it isn't easy, which I think is an amazing thing to share, because it's like, you see me and I'm doing this and I'm practicing joy, but hey guys, this isn't easy for me. Like, don't mistake it because I'm some sort of different type of person that I just have it in me. Like, it is hard work and you're working at it continuously. And I think that that is amazing. I also love that you have chosen to use these words of joy and reject the ideas of the negativity that will impact you, you know, in a way that you don't want to feel those feelings. And then also just learning about your culture and what you've had to do with, but also that you are reframing not only for yourself, but in responding to questions that are the microaggressions, you're reframing it for other people so that maybe they could take this with them. And so I feel like what you said in your afterglow is that, you know, that part of you being a teacher, like it just exists within you. Mm-hmm. And so in all these lessons that we're just retaining here, is there anything in particular, like specifically that you would want to share with our listeners?
I was thinking about that because I know it was on your list, and mm-hmm. I wrote down a whole bunch of things before.
Amazing. We want them all. We want you to tell us all of them.
And this, the first thing I wrote down, we haven't really gotten to in our conversation today, but I'll say it anyways, is read fiction. Mm. It's kind of one of my pet peeves when people say to me, oh, like, I don't read fiction because I have to read all the nonfiction. That's where I get. And
Liz,
are you listening? I've been reading fiction this year, but okay. I read like, okay, it's like Harlequin level. Like, I just,
yeah,
like,
no, that's like, fine.
So stories are so powerful.
Yeah.
And sure, there are lots of nonfiction books that are, written that are very impactful and accessible, but it is crazy what you can learn through fiction. Because it's I'm going to call it a brave space where people can actually say things that they probably want to say in an autobiography or a nonfiction book, but because they have to protect their heart or they have to protect others, they can't. And so what comes out in fiction can be incredible. And so I encourage you to find fiction that you know is going to challenge you in those ways and read some of it, because
your hot fiction tip?
I would say Johnny Appleseed by Joshua Whitehead. That character, Johnny Appleseed, he's real. And that book really moved me. Mm. Yeah. And I just finished an amazing YA, young adult book. I love to read YA often to make sure I'm okay with both my kids reading it before they pick it up. And just because I love it. It's a book called The Silence That Binds Us. The author, it's under here. The author's name is Joanna Ho. She's written quite a lot of children's books, and I'm not sure if this is even just her first YA book. But I would provide a trigger warning there for anyone, and especially for parents thinking of it for their children. It does discuss suicide. Mm-hmm. But that was, I just was blown away by that book and read all 450 pages of it in like a matter of 2 days. I loved it. It was addictive.
And you're a voracious reader, right? You read fiction,
everything, poetry.
Yeah. What else do you want our listeners to know? We'd love to hear it. What else is on your list?
I want them to, this is a quote from someone that was on a Brené Brown podcast, a psychologist named Dr. Edith Egger. And I just love it. And I use this all of the time. And I remind myself of it all the time, which is, how do you spell love? T-I-M-E.
Mm. I just got chills. Totally. Just got chills.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. So those were the two things that I really prepared. And then, yeah, for listeners, like in terms of what we've been talking about so far, just that, I guess the reminder that it's okay to shift your practices, shift your mindset, you know, especially those of us that have experienced trauma. And I know, again, that's like a big buzzword these days. And I don't use it lightly, but it's okay to change your practices. It's okay to not be okay, and really celebrate, I can't remember what the exact term is, but when you experience trauma, there's like a growth, a natural growth. Like, that's a real gift. Like, look at those things as gifts. Mm-hmm. Some days I feel crappy. I'm like, why am I living like this? Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked, Liz, before about the fact that I've never been ashamed to say that, like, I've always wanted to make a lot of money. Like, I've been obsessed with money and its power for a long time. You know, now owning my new gifts, because I am not in a position where I'm making any money, is something that I have to understand also provides me with a huge amount of power. Mm-hmm. It's a different kind of capital, but it's a capital that I've come to really appreciate and be proud of myself for owning.
When I see you modeling both post-traumatic growth and post-traumatic purpose, right? Finding mm-hmm. a new purpose, a new way to direct all your strengths, your gifts, your energy on a new course when life gives you one.
Mm-hmm. I think it's so incredibly inspiring. And when you talked about trauma, I mean, we're talking generational trauma as well as what you are dealing with for your own physical health, right? And
yes.
And mental health,
yes,
obviously now too. And so, like, that's a lot. And so I just want to say how inspiring you are, Jane, to us. Like, on a regular basis, we just are so inspired by you and seeing you and feeling your attitude, watching you on the days that you're struggling, own it and admit it and do what you need to do for yourself in those moments. And then seeing you, you know, take your power and your own, I guess, advances and use that for good. And so, you know, this podcast has really opened my eyes even more to what a gift you are to us as well as others. So thank you so much for sharing everything and coming on and being here with us today.
Well, thank you guys for having me. You guys are both an inspiration and a huge support to me.
Thank you, Jane.
And that's a wrap on this episode with Jane Breen. Make sure you follow along with us so that you can keep posted on any upcoming events with Jane. We know she's got some exciting things happening with Gratitude 10 in 2023. Be sure to like, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And follow us on our social media accounts and let us know, what is your afterglow?